The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 581, recorded on July 27th, 2020.
Welcome to the 581st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 414th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dunzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, we have to talk about what we've been playing, and I'm going to have a very long list here because I've been doing a lot of demoing on the Xbox Showcase.
Nice.
And, let's see, let's start off with Skatebird. So, yeah, Skatebird is... No, by the way, you can also chime in if you've also played the demo or whatever, or you know something about it. So Skatebird is Tony Hawk. The only problem is that the camera is really wonky. But then again, they said it was early alpha, so, you know. But yeah, it's basically Tony Hawk 1.
With birds.
With birds. And you even have to do the what was it in the original games that you had to spell out? Because you don't
skate.
Right. So in this one, you don't spell out skate. You spell out something having to do with birds.
Squawk. I don't know.
I don't remember. Then I played Cake Bash. And Cake Bash is basically Mario Party, except your pastry. And that's basically it.
It's just a series of mini-games.
Yeah. They're fun mini-games, but, you know, they're mini-games. Which also brings me to Night Squad 2. And Night Squad 2 is a top-down duck game. And basically, you're a knight, weapons spawn on the battlefield, have at it. And that's basically it. There's a lot of charm to it, just like Duck Party, except Duck Party's a 2D platform, while this is top-down. And, let's see, we also have Curved Space. Curved Space is okay. It is basically a 3D Geometry Wars.
Sounds cool.
Except you're fighting spiders. So.
Three.
Speaking of Skatebird, there was also Pixel Skater. It was a 2D platformer, and I really couldn't get into it. It was very hard to control. The controls are really slick, and in a game like that, you have to have some precise jumping. I'm pretty sure some people will get a lot of entertainment out of it because they have fast fingers. I don't. I had no fun with it. Then we had Tesla Force, which is an action RPG twin-stick shooter that has you playing as Nikola Tesla with Marie Curie. They invoke a lot of H.P. Lovecraft. And I would like to say it was a parody, you know. I would like to say that. Sort of like, what, Broforce? You know that game, right, TJ, Broforce? Uh-huh. I would like to have thought it was like Broforce, but it was too sincere for me to think it was, and it was just off-putting. It's like, okay, we're playing someone's fanfic. Doodle God Prime City is a puzzle game, and I have no idea what the goal of it is. You keep on combining stuff like put man with weapon. He is now criminal. Put criminal with, you know, and all that stuff there. And the thing is that the demo only had that portion. There's supposed to be another portion, but it has a paywall, and it's like, why would I care if I don't know what happens in the other one? I'm not going to pay for it just to see what happens on the other side. Screw that. And then you have Freshly Frosted. Freshly Frosted is another pastry game, but it's a pastry puzzle game, and it's basically a stealth way for programming. It's basically, okay, you have splitters, you have things that add on, you have if-then-else switches and all that stuff. It was fun, and it was extremely short, and it made me want to play more. So that's actually on my radar. Then we had Sailforth. I was really interested in it, but it's for babies. It is really, really simplistic. And it's a shame. By the way, they didn't have the demo for that trash game, you know, that Don't Starve Trash on a Boat game. TJ, do you remember that? Then you have The Last Cube, which is another puzzle game. It's very pretty. I don't know if it's for me, but it plays well. And, there was also Genesis Noir, which is an adventure game that has no dialogue, and it's basically jazz. And the thing is that it was very arty, but it couldn't have been pretentious because I couldn't put it down, and I wanted to see more. So that's a win for Genesis Noir. Okay, now we're going to get into the good stuff. First one is Seven Monkeys of Shaolin. It was by far the best demo. It's a beat-em-up, but it is really, really pretty, and it is silky smooth. It is really... when you're playing, it feels like a finished product. As a matter of fact, I liked it better than Streets of Rage 4, to tell you the truth. The combat gets really complicated, but you never feel like it's unfair. It's just you have to get good. So then we have Dandy Ace, which is very anime-esque. It wants to be a Hat in Time so bad. But here's the thing about it. It's a twin-stick shooter, but there's a card mechanic in which you pick up cards because your character is a magician. And you'll get a card that fires missiles. You know, you'll get another card that lays bombs. You'll get another card. And these cards will map themselves onto your controllers. You can only have four powers at any one time. It looks really nice. The gameplay is fun. It gets really, really difficult. And then we have The Haven. I don't know if you saw this one. I remember seeing trailers about it in which you play two characters, one guy and a girl, and a lot of it is relationship-based, but also it's an open-world game, too. I don't know how to quite describe it. Have you seen The Haven?
I thought I heard of it. It sounds familiar.
Anyway, but it really stresses the relationship between these two characters, even though there is definitely a game going on there. It makes me want to check it out even more.
What's it called again?
The Haven. H-A-V-E-N. Okay. It's an indie game.
Oh, it's with two people?
Yeah, and they're
a couple, and...
Yeah, and the entire game revolves around their relationship.
Okay.
It's a very slow burn. Then you have K's and the Wild Masks. This game wants to be a fusion of Sonic, Mario, and Donkey Kong Country so bad, you can feel it dripping off the screen, the desire to be a 90s platformer. It is so DK Country and Sonic.
What was this called again?
K's, K-A-Z-E, and the Wild Masks. I'm going to tell you something. I got a real furry vibe coming off this. This is someone's fanfic come to life. And I swear, I almost felt dirty playing it. It felt like someone else's game that they made to play for themselves at 12 o'clock midnight and beyond. But if you like Donkey Kong Country, you're going to love this game. Hmm. It has that 16-bit aesthetic. And it is really weird. Okay, so the next game... TJ watched the gameplay with me, Fogs, one of the most disturbing games ever to come out in a very long while. This is a game in which you play a two-headed worm dog.
Oh, yeah.
You have dog's heads on either side of a worm.
It's a cat-dog situation, except it doesn't even have legs.
And so it's one of those games like Brothers of Tale. What was it? Brothers of Tale of Two? No, something of Tale of Two Brothers.
I played that one. That was a good game.
So this is similar, in which your left thumbstick and your right thumbstick control different sides of the heads. The buttons on top, the shoulder buttons, cause them to bite at something. It's sort of like Heave-Ho in that regard. And most disturbingly of all, each trigger makes the one side stretch out like an erect penis. And this entire game has you rolling along as this dual-headed dog worm. And I gotta tell you, it gave me the creeps. This game was if you thought the trailer was creepy, no, the game is creepy. It is really creepy. I don't know if I want to play it. It's obviously a puzzle game, you know, but... And the thing that disturbed me is that all the review comments were saying how cute it was. And I'm thinking, are we playing the same game? This is not cute. This is nightmare fuel. This is a candy-coated nightmare fuel. It's a wormy push-me-pull-you. And it just is disturbing to play. And finally, one game that I decided to try because I saw all the 5-star reviews for it. And that's Helheim Hassel, which is an adventure game. And it is probably the best game that Double Fine never made.
Huh.
If I had known... If this game was so Double Fine, it's not even funny. And basically, you play a young Viking who is a coward. And he runs away from a battle. And he accidentally dies by landing on a bear. Tripping and falling on a bear. Odin comes, and our young Viking really wants to go to hell. But Odin says, no, 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 you killed the bear, you go to Valhalla. And he hates it there. So fast forward to the 20th century, a skeleton wants to deliver a package to Helheim. So she finds his skeleton, and she resurrects him. And since all his limbs popped off when he died and he reattached them, he has the power to detach his head. And if from the trailer, you also can detach his limbs, too. So it's sort of like Never Dead. I don't know if you ever played that game.
Uh-huh.
But you get such combinations, like having his head running around on a single leg instead of just rolling around. Stuff like that. It's a cute puzzle game. The acting is below the level of a Double Fine game, but it still made me chuckle once or twice. So yeah, that was a surprise thumbs up for me. Helheim Hassel, I would have never, unless I played the demo. So, you know, those are my run-throughs of the games that I demoed. Now to play the game that I actually played, and I know TJ's going to pop in on this one, I played a lot of Carrion.
Ah, nice.
And I think we discussed this last week. I described it to you, Scott, as the game that is the ending of Inside, except you're evil and a blob monster.
Right, the little red thing with the Carrion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. In this game, it's a Metroidvania. And basically, it's a lot of puzzling, but you also have to deal with aggressive people with guns. Unlike most blob monsters, bullets actually hurt a lot, so you have to avoid that. Fire will kill you even faster. And basically, the entire game is you trying to escape this complex. And you do so, you gain more and more powers, like you gain the ability to shoot webs. You gain the ability to turn into worms in water and swim through grates. That's right. And it keeps on escalating. You know, you get to the ability to harden your skin. You get the ability to grow spikes. You get this and that and the other thing. You get the ability to become invisible. You get the ability to possess other people. And it's Devolver Digital, so that basically tells you everything you need to know about the game other than what I just told you.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's the spiritual successor to Ape Out. Ape Out is a top-down action game, but they both have the same theme. You're a monster, you're trying to leave. Now, I know you reviewed it, TJ. Or someone reviewed it at Shack News.
We checked it out, and...
Yeah, I've been playing it a lot lately, and when you mention Ape Out, I would say yes, but quite frankly, not enough reactive jazz.
Yeah, but actually, here's the thing. The soundtrack is on sale at Amazon, and the soundtrack is really moody. It's a throwback to those 80s and 90s horror film tracks. You know, that low-pitched, and it increases at certain points. So it does have a good reactive soundtrack. It's just not a percussive jazz one.
Okay. It is really good. I was just making a joke. I would enjoy more offbeat reactive jazz than my horror game.
Also, sort of reminds me of Maneater, in which people.
There is a lot of unintentional comedy you can do with Carrion. You have the ability to stretch your tendrils out and reach out to things, and like you can either do it to grab things or you can just stretch your tendrils out just for fun. And occasionally, I would just like poke my tendrils over the edge of a corner, just like. Get people's attention and piss them off.
Well, you can also growl. I mean, it's not as funny, but...
And then there was an occasion where, you can rip doors open, but you can also, sit on the one side of the door and poke the door, and then they'll come and answer it, and you can just plow through them. And then there was the occasion where I took one guy and just beat the other guy up with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of physics-based stuff in here, and the problem... here's the thing, when you eat people, you increase biomass or you heal yourself. But if they have armor, you can't eat them. And in order to kill them, you have to pick them up and smack them around like a newspaper. Just whack them against the walls and stuff like that. Just bang, 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 bang until they're a mess of meat inside their armor.
You can chew on them like a dog toy, but eat them.
They're a mix, and there are people inside the mix, and the easiest way to do it is to crack open the top of it and just grab the person inside.
But yeah, like, it's so free form, and the way that you can move around and play with the abilities that are like, I made a lot of unintentional comedy with that game that it just delighted me.
So yeah, I mean, Carrion is a really good game. I mean, Devolver Digital knows its shit, you know? They have very good, what's it called? What's that word again? Something that Valve does not.
Research and development?
No. Something that Valve does not know how to do anymore.
Curation 3?
Devolver Digital has to curate its games. It really knows how to spot the games that are really interesting.
Yes. I would agree with that, because like Fall Guys is about to come out too, and that is... I'll talk about it more when I get to me, but like I played a little bit of that beta this weekend, and that is also like it's vastly different from Carrion, but it's still very good in its own way.
You know, some people compared another game I played to, someone compared Ape Out to Hotline Miami, which I guess is appropriate metaphor.
I would say that's appropriate.
Yeah. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Trials of Cold Steel. I finished the third game, and it is you're in the other large empire, Eberian Empire, and
whole new trilogy, isn't it?
Yeah, a whole new trilogy. And but
I'm wrong. Actually, there's four games in the series.
Right, and then there's going to be Crossbell duology, I guess it is. And basically, you're a whole new cast of characters, and there's different mechanics. The Orb Mint gets an upgrade. You have like a master Ceph gem to put in, and it basically bases your – kind of gives you a class, you know, and each one has different base abilities. And then you also do combine attacks or assist attacks with your characters as you link and become, I guess, friendlier with each other. You get to know each other's battle tactics better. So you gain link abilities. So when you attack, they can join in and do an assist attack or a combination with that character that's doing the attack. So there's new mechanics, and like I said, it's a new story. And yeah. Been having fun with it.
Okay, so let's talk about the Microsoft press conference. Well, not press conference, but showcase. So, one thing that Microsoft was aiming to do was say that all of these games are going to be on Xbox Game Pass, which is basically their sales pitch. So we're going to go through each one. Some of you already know them. The first one that was shown was Dragon Quest XI, which is going to be on Game Pass. And as a matter of fact, it's Dragon Quest XI S. I have no idea what the S means, Scott.
I guess special or super.
Yeah, it's the definitive edition, but why put S there?
I don't know. It's a Japanese thing. They like putting it like Sailor Moon R, Sailor Moon S, and ranking S for some reason is the best. Yeah. So I guess this is like it's a definitive final edition.
It's coming out on December 4th, so I'll get to play. I mean, I did play it. I played a DD3, you know. I could have played it on PC, but why bother playing it on PC when I can play it for quote-unquote free on Game Pass? And then you have Exomecha, which is a free-to-play game that's going to have just people fighting. It's Pacific Rim. That's basically it. It's Pacific Rim. You have mechs with swords.
I think I know why it's called Dragon Quest XI X or S. It's because this is the version that originally came out on the Nintendo Switch.
So you get the 2D version and the 3D version.
Yes.
Wait. Okay. Stop. Pause for a minute. Now, I'm getting mixed signals here from Microsoft. Is there not going to be a VR game?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, the Xbox Series X is definitely going to be powerful enough to do VR. So it makes me wonder, is that going to be their next big announcement? Because they might have announced it, but maybe they're speaking to somebody to be the official Xbox VR. Remember, they had a deal with Oculus for a while before they dropped that. So, anyways, then they showed off Watch Dogs Legion. And I'm mildly interested. The only problem with Watch Dogs is that I was burned with Watch Dogs 1 and burned with Watch Dogs 2. I don't want to be burned with Legion. However, there's two things in its favor. One, it's not Watch Dogs 3. And two, it's done by the guy who did Far Cry 2. So. The next game that they showed off was Echo Generation, which is basically... which is basically Psychonauts meets Stranger Things.
I think it was more than that. Like, there was a lot of things going on in that game.
I don't know, but it just the characters looked exactly like the characters from Psychonauts.
I would agree with that. It was a very voxely game, and they went to things like they ran into a giant skull monster that reminded me of Bloodborne. They ran into a giant spider tank that reminded me of Wasteland. There was an RPG. There was like a turn-based RPG element for a second. I feel like this is the kind of game, and they haven't said it outright, but like where you're going to be visiting a lot of different worlds, and maybe I don't know if it's imagination inside the kids' heads or if it's actually like visiting all these myriad worlds. But it looked fun. I will say that.
It's coming in 2021.
Did we already talk about Exomecha?
No. Well, we just brushed over. I said it was Pacific Rim, free to play. What's it called? Pacific Rim.
I would have thought you would have been more interested in that because I got huge Planetside vibes off of it.
What vibes off it?
Planetside.
Oh, okay. We'll see. I mean, it's free to play. It's on Game Pass. I'll probably check it out.
Yeah. That one, like, it's supposed to be having a beta here soon. And, like, it was fun. It had, like, ground combat. It had tanks and helicopters. It had mechs, which, of course, I was into. I liked the dragon. I liked the dragon breathing mech. Fire breathing mech.
Awesome.
And, like, surprising little additive about this game, you don't see too many free-to-play games that do PvP and PvE these days. Yeah. Like, usually one side of that is premium.
Well, you know what? I did download Dauntless, so I'm going to try that for the first time soon.
That'll be fun.
Like I said, Monster Hunter World didn't do it for me, so maybe Dauntless will.
Yeah, I'm big interested in Exomecha. I want to see what that is about.
Yeah. Then we had Hello Neighbor 2. And I will say this, the new creature that you're trying to evade is really creepy. It's not even remotely human. It looks like a beaked goblin.
Yeah, it's really weird to see that, like, Hello Neighbor is a strange series to have caught on so much.
Yeah, I saw a gameplay afterward in which they had a game in which you are playing the person who's trying to prevent things from, you know, these things are attacking your affair, and now you're in the role of the guy from Hello Neighbor, except you're not that, you're a girl, but... Hello Neighbor, it was a creepy trailer when it first was announced. I saw it got middling reviews, though. But, you know, Tiny Bill just has kept up with that IP. So, maybe Hello Neighbor 2 is going to be a better version of... I haven't played Hello Neighbor, for the most part, you know. I know what it's about. It's about testing the AI and seeing it react to you. So, I mean, have either of you played Hello Neighbor?
No, I have not.
I played the first one, and I thought the randomness of the AI was interesting, but I didn't really see what made it such a big deal.
So next we have Balan Wonderworld, which is Square Enix's new game, which is coming out for everything. It's coming out on Windows, Switch, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X. It was Studio Ghibli meets Dreams.
Designed by Yuji Naka, who actually was the lead designer behind Nights into Dreams, so that's not a mistake.
Yeah.
Yuji Naka was actually a key part of Sega all the way from the very first Sonic the Hedgehog and Phantasy Star all the way up until, I think, 2006. I think the last official Sega game he worked on was Sonic Generations. But yeah, so like he had his hand in Sega's pie throughout all those years.
He's
and,
so Sega, it's not even funny.
And yeah, you get a lot, they had huge Nights into Dreams vibes. I liked it.
Have you seen it, Scott?
Nights into Dreams? I thought so,
no,
yeah.
No, Balan Wonderworld.
No, I have not.
You can do a Google search for it. It's basically Nights into Dreams goes to The Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland.
A little bit of Costume Quest in there.
Yeah.
There's like 80 different. It's very theatrical.
Yeah, and there's a theater theme to it. I mean, you have stages
Whatever. Like it's an action platformer, but like whatever costume you have on gives you a special ability.
You're gonna have to spell that for me because I'm getting
Balan Wonderworld. There's also I got a strong Hat in Time from that as well. A lot of people also commented it seemed sort of like a Hat in Time too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like any game where you have like all these abilities that you can just sort of absorb based
on.
No,
but the aesthetic
state.
Too. It had that kid feel, you know. It had that kiddie feel, not you know, baby, but you know, sort of like from the eyes of a kid.
Yeah, I can tell.
That's why I said Studio Ghibli.
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I said Studio Ghibli.
You were saying Bell. All I heard was Bell.
Balan.
Okay, Balan. All right, yes. That's one. Okay.
It is very cartoon. This is the sort of game that would have been on the Dreamcast had it had the power of current gen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to skip over Halo for now, and we're going to talk about State of Decay 3. And just his existence got me excited.
I'm shocked that they're already moving on to State of Decay 3.
Why? State of Decay 2 came out a while ago. And here's the thing about State of Decay 2. State of Decay 2 has a lot of features missing.
And that's what I mean, is that actually it was only 2 years ago. It launched in 2008.
The thing is, they said, you know what, it's good enough to be released. We're going to take State of Decay 2. We have a new console coming out. We're going to up the graphics, and we're going to try and balance all the stuff we wanted to add to it. And this... we're gonna have zombie animals, just like Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare.
This concept got me and my friends into a debate. If a deer, which as in the trailer, a deer becomes a zombie. If a deer becomes a zombie, does it eat flesh or does it remain herbivore just more voraciously?
It wants flesh. It's a zombie now, damn it.
But like,
how is Balin Wonderworld there, Scott?
It does. I see why you say Studio Ghibli. It does have that feel, and it's very
Dreams. Night of the Dreams as well.
Yeah. Yes, I do remember Night of the Dreams, and it does remind me of that.
If the pictures remind, just watch the video, and you'll say, "Oh God."
That's what. Yeah, I'm watching the video, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if you have a vegetarian human and they get bitten by a zombie, they're not gonna not want to eat your brains.
But humans' natural nature is omnivore. That's what I'm saying, is that like a deer is a herbivore by nature.
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's gonna want your brains too.
But that's what I'm saying. Like the core rule, as I understand it, of biological zombieism, is that you just become replaces
overridden.
It. Yeah, it just replaces everything with the need to feed. But like, wouldn't you still feed on the thing that that satisfies your nutrient?
Because hey, do vampires drink blood, or they don't eat meat? They drink blood.
Bunnyacula drinks. Carrots. They don't drink blood. Human blood. Yeah.
Who cares? So getting back to State of Decay 3 here.
These are very important questions, and State of Decay 3 has to answer them because they brought up.
I'm worried. You know, here's the thing. I know everybody here remembers being attacked by cougars in Red Dead Redemption, and then yep. Undead Nightmare getting attacked by zombie cougars. You're gonna have the same shit here too. I know, I'm just going to be walking along and, oh, here comes a zombie bear. You're dead.
Also, that deer roared like a bear.
Yeah. Wow.
Zombie powers are weird in State of Decay.
It's a plague, though. It's not. They're not true zombies. It's a plague. It's the blood plague. But yeah.
It does feel a little chilly to get into semantics of what does a zombie eat, if it's a zombie, whatever. But I think in general...
Well, they're not zombies in The Last of Us and The Last of Us 2. They're fungal creatures. No, they're zombies.
Yes, and I know there was a rabid or whatever in...
Oh, you're thinking of Children of Men?
I was thinking
of 28 Days Later. I'm sorry.
Yeah, 28 Days Later is when... It was just like they were still alive. It was just this rabid disease that caused them to act violent. And I don't think they necessarily wanted to eat. They're just crazy and beating anything up that they could get their hands on. And that was the thing. 28 days later, they were all starved to death because they didn't know how to eat anymore. Forgot to. I don't know. So they do variations.
The other thing that State of Decay 3 seemed to indicate is that it's going to take place during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm hoping for is that it's actually a seasonal cycle. Because that would definitely be next gen if, you know, you go through spring, summer, winter, or fall. Fall, winter. And you have to deal with a change in weather. Suppose your house isn't... you know, it's winter's coming. You better have heating in your house. That sort of thing. Now, there's not much we can talk about Forza Motorsport 8, except for the fact there's no 8. It's just Forza Motorsport. Which seems to indicate that not only is it a reboot, but it may be games as service again.
That's exactly what I think it's going to be. I think they're going to stop doing... I think they're going to stop doing numbered entries and start moving into basically seasons and added content.
The other thing I noticed is that it's going to be stressing teams a lot, so I think they're going to have, you know, clan support. There's a lot of indications in the trailer that people would be playing together and have, you know, like real racing teams, you know. So we saw more of Everwild. For those who don't know, that's the game. Last year, the trailer had dead animals ascending to heaven. And I liked what I saw. You know, there was a little bit more story involved. Did you see the trailer for Everwild?
This was actually my favorite reveal of the entire... this was my favorite thing on the entire lineup.
Really?
I know we didn't see gameplay, but we saw enough of the world that made me... Like, I would be invested in this game even if I didn't know it was a game. If they could tell me it was a TV show, and I'd still want to know more about it. Like,
we learned a lot more of what the roles of the characters are in it, for one.
Yeah. First off, like, it's got really big Avatar: The Last Airbender vibes with, like, these magical people and, like, these huge mysterious magical animals, which every one of them just looked delightful, even Barf Frog. Which I will explain. There is a amphibious-looking creature that, like, they show up and, like, hey, look at that thing. It's pretty cool. And then it just barfs a whole bunch of babies into a pond.
Oh, yeah. That was crazy. I wasn't sure what the hell was going on. It was like, it was depositing its babies for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. And at the end, you had that spiritual moose made of doves and light. Mm-hmm.
Like, this game looks fun, it looks magical, it looks mysterious. I want to know more. Like, I want to see gameplay, I want to see what it's about.
It's like the other game that they said was going to be remastered for Xbox Series X, like Ori and the Will of the Wisps, you know. It's just something that looks like it's going to be an experience, and you just got to check out what the experience is.
Yeah, I'm super interested to see what Rare has up their sleeves here. I don't think we're gonna see this for a while because I still think they're working pretty hard on
it. Was a Rare game. I mean,
yeah, like everybody was like, "This is what we got instead of Banjo-Kazooie," and I was like, "Yes, thank you."
Thank you. We don't need any more 3D worlds. Thank you very much. We have Banjo-Kazooie 1, 2, and 3. We have Banjo-Tooie. We don't need any more of that. Oh, I will say this, you know, I know a lot of people were disappointed that they didn't announce what was speculated that they might announce a reboot of Perfect Dark.
Yes, I had heard that rumor as well. One of the rumors turned out to be true, so that one for two, I bet.
Well, we'll discuss that when it comes up. Then we had Tell Me Why, which is just another... It is Don't Nod... I mean, Don't Nod now has a brand. You can tell a Don't Nod adventure game just from the characters and the way they speak. It's so French pretending to be American. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have just said it was, oh God, what was the name of the, I can't remember, I can't remember, I forgot the name of their Life is Strange. I mean, why not call it Life is Strange 3? Because that's what it—that's what I thought it was. Even after I knew the title, Tell Me Why.
I've heard people. The whispers I've heard, and I suspect. Like, I don't. I have no idea yet. But like, Life is Strange 2 kicked off with like a prequel that wasn't called Life is Strange. It was called Captain Tomorrow or whatever.
Yeah. And this is coming out soon. It's coming out in a month, August 27th, so we'll find out soon enough.
The one I liked was Avowed from Obsidian.
Yeah, we're gonna get around to that.
Okay.
We're not talking about Ori and the Will of the Wisps because basically the news is it's going to be at 120 frames per second. And I'm going to tell you, if you play it at 120 frames, that action is going to be so buttery smooth, it's not even going to be funny. They announced the first of Obsidian's thing, and that's the Perilon Gorgon DLC. And I heard a lot of people saying, this is old world blues for Outer Worlds.
I'm completely okay with that.
It is so old world blues, it's not even funny. I mean, you might as well go to your strengths, right? Now, one thing that interested me is that they did not say anything about Outer Worlds 2, even though we know it's coming, because they already announced it.
Yeah, I mean, like, they have to focus on DLC, and I suspect that this DLC got pushed back by COVID. Because COVID did delay the Nintendo Switch launch. Yep.
Next is a game that's launching at 12 midnight tonight, and that's Grounded, which I am very excited over because, you know, for those of you who watched the video of me playing the demo with TJ, I can't wait to play this game. It's a survival game, but it isn't opaque, you know. One thing that I couldn't get around with Subnautica is that a lot of it was just, where do I find this? Where do I find that? You know, in this game, it's like, oh, I have to chop down some grass. Okay.
It wasn't intuitive enough for you, to Subnautica.
I love it, though. It's very,
by the way, I found out that, you know, the Obsidian, the guys who did this, actually, yeah, they did read Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and other things before playing the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta know your source material. And Obsidian is the type to study.
I can't wait to see what it's like on the Xbox Series X.
Agreed.
Because already it's beautiful. And like I said, it's Game Pass, so I'm going to have it on my PC and my Xbox. And it's also cross-play, so it's not like I have to, you know, if I'm doing something on a PC, I'm just going to play it on the Xbox instead. So I know this is the thing that Scott has been waiting for us to talk about. The other Obsidian announcement is Avowed, which is a first-person fantasy RPG. And it's based in the Pillars of Eternity universe.
And it's going to be... it's said to be a denser game than Skyrim. And you can see they're using... It looks like they're using the mechanics of, you have magic in one hand and weapon in another. And the trailer didn't show too much beyond that, other than something was coming out of a very well-lit-looking cavern, probably a dragon or something.
I think, you know, this is what everybody was waiting for Obsidian to do for Microsoft, basically.
Yeah.
This is what they were waiting for them to do.
There was also a little bit of a factor that you had the sword in one hand and what looked like a spell in the other hand.
Yeah,
so.
Scott just said that.
Oh, it's fine.
Sorry.
And the thing the thing that's really selling this is Fallout New Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Obsidian's work with Fallout New Vegas is what's selling Avowed, especially since no one knows when the Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be coming out.
I mean,
Outer Worlds
is selling it too, because they proved they can do it. They proved that they can do Bethesda more proficiently than Bethesda can do Bethesda these days.
You know, yes. I know you like the Outer Worlds, but the Outer Worlds just left me cold.
It's still a better game than most of Bethesda's games in the last decade.
What?
It's still a better Bethesda game than Bethesda games in the last decade.
Okay, let me put it. It was competently made. The combat, you know, all that stuff. It's just the story was really bad.
So are most Bethesda games.
Here's the thing. You know, the Outer Worlds reminded me more of Dishonored than it did any of the Bethesda first-person stuff. For some reason, I just got Dishonored vibes from it.
I mean, it didn't have VATS. That's about the only thing that I can...
No, it had... Oh, you have brain freeze
time,
or whatever it is.
Time slow.
Time manipulate, whatever.
But I mean, like, Bethesda, I mean, Obsidian has been showing for a while that they have the chops. They learned their lesson from what they did with Fallout New Vegas, and now they're ready to... I mean, all things considered...
Showing they learned what they did wrong with the Outer Worlds.
I'm telling you right now, they're going to pull an alpha move and bust out this game before Bethesda gets to Elder Scrolls 6.
It's probably going
to
be 10 or 20 years before they make Half-Life 3 will come out before Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah, we've seen nothing of Elder Scrolls 6 other than that one landscape shot. Here we already have what looks to be
minor gameplay.
Yeah, we have some gameplay a little bit, and you know, so you get a good idea of what to expect. And yeah, we have a setting. We know it generally where it's going to be. We don't know what timeline it's going to be, but we have something to go by. With Elder Scrolls 6, you just, again, have this nature shot and people can speculate, but we have
no
idea.
There's a lot of stuff Bethesda's announced that we don't know when it's coming out. I mean, what is this? Starpoint?
Starfield,
yeah. No idea what that is.
None at all. It's probably a first-person space game, but we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
But the other thing that this basically confirms there will be no Pillars of Eternity 3. But I know, Scott, you're probably excited to get back into that universe.
Yeah, it's a very rich world, and there's a lot of places for them to explore that they haven't done so yet in the other two Pillars games. I guess we'll have to wait and see what area they're in or what time, and maybe if those other characters from the first two games show up, you never know, I guess, at this point.
Moving on, we have the teaser for As Dusk Falls. There's not much to say about it except showing off the graphics again and showing off a lot of ray tracing.
Mm-hmm. This was the one that was kind of like everything in the world was like moving, but like the characters were stop motion. Yeah. It was very stylized. I liked it.
By the way, during the ID at Xbox little thing saying everything's going to be upscaled for Xbox Series X. One game that they showed a clip from was 12 minutes, and I'm still or is it 10 minutes? 12 minutes? 10 minutes? 12 minutes? That game, yeah, 12 minutes. That game in which it's a top-down and time keeps on looping every 12 minutes, I'm still interested to see more about that. It looks really interesting. You remember that game, right?
Which one?
12 minutes.
Yes.
They showed a clip of it during the... And I still want to see something about it. Then you had Senua's Saga Hellblade 2. There was no information about it except for the fact that they confirmed it's going to take place in Iceland. Which isn't a shock because we saw various scenery that's only in Iceland. Including that place where it's the constant volcano. Then they showed off Psychonauts 2, and we found out Jack Black can really sing, although, actually, we should already know that because of Tenacious D.
Uh-huh.
One of the jokes I made was, where's Kyle Gass? But I backed Psychonauts 2 on Fig for $820, so obviously I'm really looking forward to it, and any bit of gameplay that we can see, saw in the trailer, I'm really excited for it. I still am.
Yeah. Pretty good song, too. I enjoyed it. Yeah. Not as much as Bucksnacks, but it came close.
Yeah, the Destiny of Light DLC, I don't care. But they did announce that Destiny 2, with all the expansions, will be on Game Pass in September.
Mm-hmm.
There was another game that was announced that got people really excited, because it's been in development for, 20 years? And that's Stalker 2.
That's a long time.
Stalker 2 finally had a gameplay trailer.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people excited about that. And I will say this. If you go to the trailer on Xbox, it's almost all Cyrillic. Almost all the comments are in Cyrillic. Russia really, 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 really wants to play this game.
Yes.
And not surprising. I mean, for those of you who don't know, Stalker takes place in Pripyat, which is around Chernobyl. And it's all about, Stalker, the original Stalker was a survival first-person game before it became big. Before all the Rusts and the DayZs, it looks gorgeous, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this game has been basically 2 decades in making.
Yes, and for that long, it better be gorgeous.
Well, you never know. I mean, there's some games that keep on getting delayed and delayed and delayed because they keep on wanting to use the new engine, Duke Nukem. They also announced Tetris Effect Connected, which is adding a co-op mode and competitive online and local multiplayer. And again, my thought is, yeah, Tetris Effect is fine, but you know what? The real reason to play Tetris Effect is with a VR headset, which makes me wonder, are they going to have VR for it?
The long way, the really, really long like PvE mode for Tetris kind of looked interesting. Where you have like basically a triple wide Tetris map and you got three players placing blocks.
But again, you think this is basically Microsoft not announcing but announcing VR?
I don't know. Yeah, because like Tetris Effect is PSVR enabled on PlayStation.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
like,
well, my point is that I don't care about Tetris Effect as a Tetris game. It's basically Tetris. You know, the thing that everybody loved is the fact that the guy who did Rez added all the Luminous did all these cool effects that you're playing. You know, so you can zone out while you're playing, especially while you have VR on.
Uh huh. There's a theater mode in the game where you can just like watch somebody else play a Tetris to the effects, and it's a super therapeutic game if you ask me.
Yeah. Then you have The Gunk, which is a third person adventure game. It has a Ghostbusters vibe to it.
Yeah.
And almost nothing's about it except for the fact. It's a really weird world you live in.
Yeah, I didn't think much of this one.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't really strike me as all that, like, standout compared to some of the other stuff.
Okay, let's talk about Bloober Team's The Medium, then. They showed off the new mechanic, in which basically you're in Silent World and you switch between the regular Silent Hill, and you switch between regular world and Silent Hill world, and they both have an effect on each other. Okay, I'm being snarky about it, but Bloober Team has made no secret that this is it's inspired by Silent Hill.
Uh-huh.
They hired the composer to Silent Hill's music. So what they showed off is that you have the real world, and then you have the other world. And the characters in either world are the same person, but a different version of that person. And basically have the... You go into the other world to affect the real world, you know, that sort of mechanic. So what do you think of The Medium?
I hope it's better than The Blair Witch.
I'm sure it will be.
The game by Blair... Did you like Layers of Fear?
I did, and I liked Layers of Fear, too. It's very weird for Bloober Team to have a miss, because they've been doing a very good job with atmospheric first-person noir. It's just like Blair Witch was kind of a mess.
Well, I mean, it was a licensed game, and you have to wonder how much control they had over it.
I agree. That might be a huge possibility. Maybe that was kind of a make money on this license deal type thing. Either way, I... Like, one miss isn't enough to make me not trust a team ever again. They have plenty of good games behind their track record.
Well, I'll say this. No matter what, The Medium's going to have great graphics and great music.
Observer was also very good.
I try to get into Observer. It's a fine game. It's just that the puzzly... I may have to play it with a not with a keyboard and mouse, but with a controller. I think it might be easier with a controller.
Yeah, but like Medium, I'm interested to see what it's gonna be like. I like the Silent Hill method of it.
Then we had Crossfire X, which is a new first person shooter, very graphic intensive, and it didn't look like anything special except for the fact, you know, looks good. But they did have campaign gameplay though. It's not a pure, you know, multiplayer game.
Yeah, this is another one that I didn't really care. I didn't really have a feeling one way or the other for.
So let's talk about the one game that everybody was expecting Microsoft to announce, and there was just one surprise to it. And of course, we're talking about Fable. That is basically everybody knew that Playground Games was working on a new Fable. The thing that everybody noticed right away, that it's not Fable 4. It is Fable, period.
Mm-hmm.
You had a sense of humor. I mean, you had the fairy being swallowed up by a giant frog.
Yes.
I thought that was funny. It was a kind of a dark humor. It was a dark humor kind of moment.
Yeah, but you know, it wasn't Peter Molyneux humor. It was more like Shrek humor.
Yeah, I could see that. And like, because I remember. I think it was Fable 3 with the chicken running around the town.
Yeah. By the way, that's still the best trailer of any of the Rare games. The Revolution trailer.
I thought it amused me seeing the fairy get eaten by the toad because it was very unexpected, and I think that's the hint that they're saying, that you know you have this deceptively magical naive world that really has a dangerous underbelly.
The other thing that a lot of people notice is that it is a huge graphic bump, because even Fable 3, it still retained a cartoony look. Deliberately, mm-hmm. You know, it could have gone for a more realistic look. Fable has an arty look. It's not going to be, you know, realistic, but it looks like it's going to have realer. It's not going to be as cartoony as the other Fables.
Right.
But as long as it, like
cartoony,
that,
but
I would say that, like, that is one of the things that's at the core of Fable, though, is like having that sense of humor about it. Like, it's a weird kind of funny compared to the other compared to other RPGs of its kind.
Yeah. Here's the other thing too. The original Fable, if you remember, Peter Molyneux made a lot of promises. Like, he made the promise that if you plant an acorn, when you come back a few years later, there'll be an oak tree. And I'm wondering if they're going, now that we have the technology to do it, if they're going to try that sort of time passage thing. Because the entire point of Fable is that the longer you play, you know, the more things happen around you. You know, like, if you cast a lot of magic, your hair grows white, you know, or if you get hit a lot, you know, fighting and you get knocked down,
you get scars.
You start getting scarred, you know. So I'm hoping that they maintain that core element of Fable, and that is that everything you do has an effect on yourself and the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I'm happy to see this game out of Peter Molyneux's hands. I'm happy to see Playground Games take the reins on this.
Have a nice dry British wit like Fable did.
I mean, they are a British developer, so I would hope so.
But it's not like they all play. See, Peter Molyneux was going for Monty Python with Fable.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know I don't know. So let's talk about Halo Infinite. What we know now is that it is officially an open world open world.
Yes.
And the other thing is that I got a lot of Middle-Earth Shadow vibes from it. Especially since now they gave Master Chief a grappling hook. So he can Batman his way to higher things.
I was way into the grappling hook.
Well, the thing is that there's going to be a lot of... this is going to be the most vertically inclined Halo. Because if you notice the map, there's a lot of steps and hills and all that stuff that you have to get on top of. And one of the things that I found out after it is that the gameplay that they showed off was from an alpha build.
Yeah.
And I don't know why Microsoft would not want to put their best foot forward, or at least show on the bottom alpha build footage. Because then they showed a trailer showing the actual graphics, you know, better graphics, you know, and a lot of the stuff that looked sort of clean in Halo Infinite was a lot dirtier, a lot grimier, a lot more detail. I know a lot of Halo fans were not fans of the combat shotgun that was in it.
Yeah.
They didn't like the pistol. They want the Magnum. Because the pistol... I will agree, the pistol looks kind of chintzy. I'm hoping that they also have the Magnum, too.
They had a lot of weapons they showed off a lot of weapons I did enjoy, though. Like, that slow rate of fire battle rifle looked fun.
That brute gun.
Yeah, I was going to say, that large cannon-looking gun with the exhaust on the sides.
Yeah. By the way, they did confirm that combat shotgun would be replacing the regular shotgun.
Also, that thing looked like a Nerf gun. Like a really angry Nerf gun.
But, you know, I always liked the combat shotgun in Left 4 Dead, so.
I kind of loved it. Like, it's, you know, like, as I will say this, it felt like they went for a lot of, like, things that, like, traditionalists will love. And there was a lot of things in that trailer that made me think, oh, this is a lot like Halo 1, but better.
I will notice something. You know how that demo began, right? It actually had the press start to begin, which sort of tells you that this is the demo you're going to play.
When you release right.
The one thing that was disappointing was that Microsoft announced that they would be delaying the multiplayer thing demo.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because as much as I love single player in Halo, Halo lives and dies on its multiplayer. And that's what they're trying to nail 100%.
Right. What do you think of what do you think of an open world for Halo? Because Halo traditionally
played an open world for Halo with Halo 3 ODST.
Yeah, kind of. But like, for the most part, when I think of Halo, I think of a kind of tightly packed ongoing
area. Really? Because no, I think of wide open areas when I think of Halo. Blood Gulch, for instance.
It's still like when I think of the campaign, though, I still think the river may be wide, but it's still a river. I think of a narrative that sort of moves you along to these sweeping set pieces and like.
Here's the thing, but that's what's going to happen in Halo, in that you start on an island, and you have to complete the island's objectives to move to the next island.
I really do hope that they can still capture the feeling of like the strong set piece Halo campaign in an open world.
Well, the set piece Halo campaigns have always been open thing. I mean, everybody loves having to deal with the two scarabs in Halo 3.
Right, but it still levels.
Like I said, the islands are going to be levels unto themselves. But I'm willing to bet you there you can revisit islands, because those Stargate looking things. Those are probably going to be the portals between islands.
Yeah. I really hope they go all out with that grappling hook. I hope they don't.
Yeah,
I hope
more that you can grab people, you can grab items and throw it at people.
We saw him grab the fusion tank and throw it at them and it exploded. I want to be able to grapple grunts and swing them at other grunts.
Did you see where one of the brutes actually grabbed a grunt and threw him at you?
Yes.
And he was angry too, the grunt. I forgot what he was screaming, but he was screaming at the grunt, not you. It was one of the suicide grunts too, with the two each of having a sticky grenade in each hand. But yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of people had mixed feelings about it. I'm not worried. Because here's the thing. If you own an Xbox, you're going to buy Halo. It's not going to be an option. You're going to buy it. Or you're going to have it on Game Pass, you know. So they just have to get it right on release. That's all.
Yeah.
Anyways, we are done with Microsoft Showcase.
There was one thing we didn't talk about.
Yeah, there's several things that were not announced. They did not announce Lockhart. Which surprised
me. Oh, I was going to say, we didn't talk about Darktide, did we?
Okay, you want to talk about the Warhammer game? Sure.
I do, because, like, how cool is that that Fat Shark has done so well that they're about to move on to the sci-fi end of Warhammer?
I thought that was already released. I thought Darktide was was already an Xbox One game that they're just making an Xbox Series X version of.
No, not yet. Fat Shark, for those who don't know, is the team that worked on Warhammer Vermintide 1 and 2. And so Darktide is going to be their take on it that takes it to the Warhammer 40K universe.
It makes more sense to do a Left 4 Dead game with guns than it does with melee weapons.
Oh, but Warhammer Vermintide works very well. I love those games.
That sort of game is like Left 4 Dead. You need guns. You need ranged attacks.
You have ranged attacks in Vermintide.
Yeah, I know you have ranged attacks in Vermintide, but I mean, if you're playing the dwarf, come on.
I think it's fun. I think it's really good. And a lot of people agree with me. Like, Vermintide is super good.
They microtransactioned the hell out of the sequel.
I've been able to play through a whole bunch of that game without spending a dollar.
That's fine. You can grind all you like. You ground it up on Rainbow Six Siege.
I mean, it's not even that much of a grind. I've just played through the campaign and just unlocked difficulty levels and kept playing.
Okay. Anyway, getting back to Dark Tide. Yeah, I mean, a good co-op game is always fun. I mean, that's why I'm so excited about Star Wars Squadrons.
Yes. And, like, I think that, like, Fat Shark has earned what they're doing here. Like, they've shown that they can do it proficiently enough, and they've earned enough following from the work that they've done on Vermintide. Like, regardless of what you think of it, they've earned enough of a following from the fans.
Vermintide.
They've earned enough following from the fans to continue this guy. Obviously,
they started kind of shaky, though. You know what one of their first games was, right?
Yes.
Bionic Commando Rearmed 2.
Yes. But, like, they've earned enough trust. Like, Games Workshop are not easy people to work for, from what I understand, from a lot of people who have worked with that license. They are very particular about the Warhammer universe. And Fat Shark has done a good job. They've carried the banner this far, and I have full faith in them to do a good job with Warhammer 40K.
I don't doubt it. It's just that... Whatever. Here's the thing, though. Everything that we've discussed, every single game, is going to be on Game Pass, so I'm going to be able to try it out anyway.
Yes.
So, there is something else I want to talk about. Okay, so now I know Scott is excited about a certain Kickstarter fund, which they passed in 3 hours, and they actually hit $1 million like an hour ago. Scott? Did Scott fall asleep again?
I don't know.
Anyways, so yeah, how do you pronounce this? Eudian Chronicles, which is the Suikoden spiritual successor. It was announced today. It passed its Kickstarter. It passed its Kickstarter thing in a second, and now it's over $1 million, and it still has 31 days left of backing.
Eudian Chronicles is how you say it.
Yeah.
But this game looks Octopath Traveler as hell. and I'm way into it.
Well, apparently. I mean, it hit $1 million on its first day.
And yeah.
They only wanted 500K.
Yeah, and they have more than enough to put it out on every... They're gonna move it on Xbox... Xbox One, Xbox Series X.
Developers, so we have to be careful. Hopefully, they learn the lessons from past Japanese developers who have been on Kickstarter. I hope they already have an alpha build of the game before they put. I hope they have an alpha build already. Let me just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we saw what happened to Mighty No. 9. You saw what happened to Project Phoenix. We saw what happened to all these other games, and they have to. You know, but the thing is that, you know, $1 million people want this, and it does look nice.
Yeah, I love the character designs. But like, it's got a good team of people behind it. Like, it's got a really good team of people behind it. And like, I don't know. I know we've seen veterans of Japanese development like fail on Kickstarter before.
Mighty No. 9. But actually, you know, we did see him succeed with Bloodstained.
I would even say the Bloodstained has had its share of a bumpy road.
Oh no, it got universally good reviews. I mean, and then it got some spin-offs, which have gotten really good reviews. I mean, but Bloodstained was what everybody wanted, and they liked what they got.
Right. It was just I was just saying it was a bumpy road onto like not up to release day, but there was quite a few moments there where like there was the people hated the way it looked for a while, and so they had to go back and redesign all the visuals. They're like these. It's a tough road to work on Kickstarter, and I hope these guys have the stomach for it, because this looks fun. I'm all for more games like Octopath Traveler, and this looks very much like that.
It looks like a Dreamcast game, except with really high res textures and real and lighting. You know, they managed to get the feel of a Dreamcast game, but make it look modern.
These sprites are absolutely gorgeous. Like, they show them in the game world, and like, it's kind of hard to tell. Like, they could be some of these could be 2D, but they also just look so detailed that they could be a little bit 3D as well.
I mean, if you look at the gameplay itself, I mean, just the shot of one of the characters running. You know, you have 3D background, and you have the out of focus as it gets deeper, and all that stuff, and you have a ton of characters going at once. So you're actually in a crowd, you know, and you can tell that's the biggest difference from old JRPGs. You were in a quote unquote crowd in those games, but the crowd meant like six people on the screen at once. But yeah, I mean, the combat looks okay. At least it's turn-based.
Yes. They are definitely making a game for the kind of people that will absolutely adore this type of game.
Because I'm going to tell you something, you know? Some games, Final Fantasy VII, try to do the mixture of real-time and turn-based, and, you know, a lot of people find that off-putting. Sometimes they, you know... Just turn-based. I go, you go, I go, you go, I go, you go.
Yeah, like, I want to see more of the gameplay, but I'm way invested based on, like, the visuals that we see here. There's a lot of, like, I'm really... They have the person that worked on Castlevania Aria of Sorrow as one of the art directors, and that is, I love Aria of Sorrow. They have the composers from both the Tales series and the Wild Arms series, which win-win. And then they have a whole bunch of just veterans from Suikoden throughout like the first and second and third and fourth games.
Yeah, there's also two things that they're really pushing. One is the idea that you're building an army. You meet NPCs and you recruit them for your army. No matter what, you know, like chefs or soldiers or whatever. And you have to create you have to make troops, you have to cultivate fields, you have to create specialty products, you know, so you're actually building a town. And the other thing they're really stressing is there's a lot of cats in it. To quote the site, cats as far as the eye can see. Cats meowing, cats napping, cats exploring the world. Cats meow.
Which one was this?
The game we're talking about.
Wait, is it Ayudin?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see the cats part.
You didn't know he had
part.
A recruiting mechanic?
I didn't see the cats part.
Oh, no, it's in the Kickstarter page. They're really talking up the cats.
Well, that's just delightful.
They want adorable cats in the game.
Awesome. Like, I guess whatever, like, I do want to see this game come to Nintendo Switch more than anything. And that's going to be one of the stretch goals, but like first things first, there it looks like they're going for PS4, Xbox One, PS5 and Xbox Series X.
They want to sell this in Japan. It'll be for the Oh, look. It now is up to 1.2 million.
Good for them.
And it's like
fantastic.
One funny thing is that Kickstarter now has the live counter, so when you go to the Kickstarter page, you just see the amount going up and up and up and up in real time. And it's like there's a donation once every like 3 seconds. So yeah, I mean, it got 1.25 million, and there's still 31 days of funding to go.
Nice. So. Yeah, this is gonna. They're probably gonna meet all their stretch goals, and I hope that they have. And I hope that they take that money and do good things with it.
So they said that you know the PC is the minimum goal, but the stretch goals are PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. And I'm pretty sure, no matter what, there will be a Switch version at some point. And, you know what I hope? I hope they actually release a boxed version for people.
Yeah, this would be a good one for limited edition games, or limited run games.
Yeah. Anyway, let's jump to game news. Hideo Kojima is in talks with Junji Ito about a new project. This comes from IGN. Hideo Kojima has spoken with Junji Ito about a horror-based game that he may be working on. As reported by comicbook.com, Ito is being interviewed by Viz Media during Comic-Con Comic-Con at Home 2020. By the way, on the 31st, Gen Con will be online. So, and it's free registration. So anybody wants to check out Gen Con online, you know, you can register and check it out this coming weekend. Anyways, he was asked if he was currently involved in any video game development. Ito, who was working with Kojima and Guillermo del Toro on the canceled Silent Hills project and made a cameo in Death Stranding, confirmed that he was in talks about a potential new horror project, and Kojima invited him to work on it. Kojima recently revealed that a big project was recently scrapped, and his next game would not be anything related to Metal Gear Solid, or PT. Last month, however, a tweet by Kojima may have teased that the next project could be a sequel to Death Stranding or may take place in its universe. In 2017, Kojima also admitted he doesn't want to make a horror game, but he doesn't rule out any future project led by him that would include horror elements, and that was where Ito could be a perfect fit. So, everybody loves Junji Ito. He does a lot of innocent person gets caught in a world of shit kind of stories. The only problem is that I don't know how well Junji Ito translates to other media. A lot of his horror depends on you reading his graphic novels.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like the next page is the shock. Because they recently did an anime based on his work, and it was bad.
I mean, Junji Ito's main claim to fame is he does body horror that is like... what's that guy's name?
There's David Cronenberg?
He does Cronenberg-level body horror.
I guess, but here's the thing. I know it's getting into semantics, but David Cronenberg was always fascinated with human and machine. You know, Junji Ito is fascinated with human and nature.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of his most famous one, Spirals, I temporarily forgot the Spanish name for it, dealt with a lot of humans obsessed with spirals.
Mm-hmm.
Like snails, bending themselves into spirals, the protagonist's friend's mother stabs herself in the ears because she finds out about the cochlea, which is a spiral in your ear. For those who don't know. So, I don't know how well it'll translate to video games or even TV. Although I will say, you could have said the same thing about H.R. Giger. You just have to have the right person translating it.
Right. And I mean, like, say what you will, I think...
But here's the, you know, like I said, but Junji Ito's horror, a lot of it comes from turning that page.
Right. But there is a lot of Silent Hill that is built upon a growing suspense, a growing sense of dread, the sense that when you open the door to something, it's not going to be something that jumps out at you. It's going to be something that slowly becomes more like your mind tries to make sense of what you're looking at, and by the time you realize it, it's horrible.
Okay, did you play World of Horror?
I didn't.
Okay, so World of Horror, which is also on Game Pass and Game Preview, is a Junji Ito-inspired horror game, which mm-hmm. also takes its aesthetics from playing a game on the Apple II in 1980.
Yes.
So it attempts everything you're saying, and it fails.
I don't think it fails so much as, like, I don't know. There's a certain style to that kind of thing where, like, I'm not gonna sit here and be a Junji Ito apologist because
being a Junji Ito apologist. It's Marshall McLuhan said that the medium is the message.
Right. And I would say that, like, I feel like something that's in motion, like Silent Hill, has a better chance of conveying that sort of I don't understand what I'm looking at until I do, and when I do, it's horrible and I feel sick to my stomach looking at it. I feel like something in motion is more capable of that than. And you could argue that like that's not true because Junji Ito's entire like his
who needs to work with Junji Ito. Frictional Games should work with Junji Ito.
I agree. That would be
a
good one too.
They would know how to translate his shit into making something that's actually scary.
But he's gonna. But in all likelihood, Guillermo del Toro is also probably going to work on this project.
Who cares about Guillermo fucking Toro? I mean. Look at all the games that he was supposed to make that never made it. I mean, no, I don't. Guillermo del Toro, actually, I don't really like him as a director in the first place.
Aw.
Fuck Shape of Water. Fuck. The thing with the monster with his eyes on it.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. Oh, there you are. You know, we talked about Yuden Chronicle for like 10 minutes, and you never piped in once.
I'm sorry, I guess I fell asleep.
What's it called? But you can't say how excited you are about it.
Well, I backed it, you know, because I felt like this was a vote with your wallet kind of moment, and want to send a message to Konami that, you know, look at all this money you can't have now. but yeah. I'm sure, again, you probably went into the details of how they're doing the six-character party, town building, and recruiting 100 stars or 100
warriors. You know about all the cats, right?
Yes, there's cats. Always. They showed one battle sequence, and there's a cat just sleeping on a pillar while you're fighting a battle. So that'll be interesting to see. Just like cats are like a decoration.
You can actually become an NPC in the game, by the way.
That's right. I saw something about that. So that'll be interesting.
Anyways, getting back to Junji Ito and games and all that stuff. I don't give a shit about Guillermo del Toro as a video game developer. I don't even like him as a film director all that much.
That's fine. A lot of people do, though.
It's fine, but here's the thing: he hasn't shown jack shit when it comes to making video games.
That's not true because he had a hand in Death Stranding, and that came out.
He had a hand in it.
I mean, a lot of people cared. That's like the fact of the matter.
He had a hand in it, like I had a hand in it. If I just gave a few suggestions.
Oh really? Where's your scene in Death Stranding? I didn't see it.
This way. Yeah. Well, you know what? what's the name of that that action director, kung fu action director again from Hong Kong?
I don't know.
He was really hot for a long while. But actually, I'm thinking about the Xbox 360 game, which actually starred the likeness and voice of one of the and it was basically based on his.
I don't know.
He also directed Broken Arrow. John Woo, that's right.
John Woo? Okay.
Yeah, he appeared in Stranglehold.
Wait, are you saying Stranglehold wasn't good?
Oh, I love Stranglehold. I'm just saying.
I was going
to
say.
He had almost nothing to do with Stranglehold except for the fact that it's based on one of his movies and that he has a cameo in it.
Del Toro actually advised on the narrative of Death Stranding, though. Like,
I still haven't seen Hard Boiled yet. I only know Stranglehold.
But here's the fact of the matter: there's a very heavy likelihood that Hideo Kojima is coming out with a Silent Hill inspired game, which will involve probably the likes of Guillermo del Toro and Junji Ito in its narrative and visual design. No one cares. Hold on. on the flip side of that. Konami is also rumored to be working on a reboot of Silent Hill, which is going to involve both the original director, the original composer and the original art director. And so in the next 2 years, there's a very strong likelihood that we could see a big resurgence in Silent Hill style horror games.
Oh, Frictional's going to slap you in the face for that one.
It's not, yeah, well, like, Frictional does good, and then you also have Frictional doing their next,
Better than them for the past few years in terms of horror.
Done better?
Yeah, I mean, the past decade.
Okay, so, like, they're also about to do Insomnia. Yes.
Yeah, they're doing Insomnia, yeah. I mean, they're doing a new Amnesia, yes.
Amnesia. And, so that even adds to my case. It's not saying anything against Frictional Games, but if you put it that way, they've kind of been alone in this field doing it by themselves.
I would say this, you know, if I was a Japanese company, I'd go over to Frictional Games and ask them to make the next Silent Hill for them.
But I like the idea of having, like, three different games, all with a different take on this style of horror.
I'm just saying, Junji Ito so far has not translated well to other mediums. He hasn't translated to anime, and I think a lot of that is here's the thing, the people who did the anime did it on the cheap. You could tell it was done on the cheap. They didn't really give a shit.
Oh, and that makes for, like, it doesn't matter who's behind it. If it's done poor quality, it's done poor quality.
But I don't think it would have been half as scary as his. Here's the thing about Junji Ito. His drawings are really super detailed.
Yes.
Super detailed, and that's hard to do in a video game. Unless you make a 2D game.
I mean, it depends on who's handling the graphical design, I guess.
Anyway,
there are some very, very, very complex creatures, and
I will say this: it would have been impossible to translate. It was impossible to translate to the anime, even if I think they had really worked on it. And a game that's basically a love letter to Junji Ito's work. You know, the Dark World. I mean, World of Horror. Isn't that scary? You know? It could have been.
It's more disturbing and just, like, creep. Like I said, it's that Cronenberg thing.
It's... here's the thing that Junji Ito does that I don't think people do anymore. I know Sam Raimi did it, actually. It would drag me down to hell. And that is bad things happening to innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
In horror films, it's always either teenagers who are shitheads, and the most pure of them gets away, or every death in a horror film, someone has to deserve it.
And Junji Ito's world, like, it's cruel. Like, bad things happen to characters that just have no idea what's happening.
Or it's just bad things happen to people, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a force of nature. I'm thinking about that... The story about the balloons.
Mm-hmm.
And the story about the rock face in which people have these holes in a mountain that are specifically shaped for them, you know? And the one in which people get sewn up. It's that people are inextricably drawn to doing something either really stupid or really dangerous. But they can't help themselves. They have to do it.
He also has a weird fascination with cats.
Well, then you have to put him in the new game, Eden Chronicles. Turn that into a Junji Ito game. but yeah,
I'm into it though. I want to see what comes of this new era of, like, Konami and Hideo Kojima racing to put out the next Silent Hill-esque game.
Promise. I'm not going to judge Guillermo del Toro until he actually makes a game. Whenever the fuck that is.
Fair. That's fair.
And, you know, they had the
I mean, Death Stranding isn't for everyone. It's a weird game, and it's, like, not...
I'm going to check it out. I mean, the guy who made Shenmue, you know... Shenmue 3 was a piece of shit, because he'd learned nothing about video games in the past 20 years, and he already even said, I don't care about video games. What the fuck are you making video games for, then? If you don't care about video games. Anyways, we're talking too much about this. Let's find out if there is anything to announce, because this entire article, everything is a rumor.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Mysterious white next-gen Xbox controller appears online from The Verge. A white Xbox Series X controller appeared to have leaked online. An image of the white controller appeared on Reddit over the weekend before the poster deleted their account and image. Identified only as Wolfie Wizardo.
You know what? He took the name. Damn it. That's the name. Scott probably wants that name even more than I do, actually.
Yeah, I do like Wolf. That's funny. Go ahead, TJ.
Scott, the Reddit user.
Talk closer to your mic. I can barely hear you.
Sorry. Yes, the name does sound funny. I do like it. Just didn't want to interrupt TJ too much. But a Wizarding Wolf sounds funny, yes.
It actually sounds like a character from Balan Wonderworld.
I would be okay with that. The Reddit user claimed to have snapped the photo at a party in Washington State hosted by the child of a Microsoft employee. Before the account deletion, the Reddit account had been commenting and posting about topics in Seattle, Washington for months. The controller itself includes the new D-pad on the Xbox Series X controller alongside the new share button that Microsoft is shipping next-gen controllers. We spoke to the Reddit user before their account was deleted, and they claimed the associated console was also white and looked more squarish, and the Xbox button looked bigger on it. They also claimed to have played the games on the console and that the interface still looked like the Xbox One UI. Microsoft is sticking largely to the same Xbox dashboard that ships on the Xbox One, with some minor tweaks to enable new features like Quick Resume. Some are speculating that this white Xbox controller could indicate the existence of a second-gen Xbox. Microsoft is rumored to be launching its second, cheaper next-gen Xbox, codenamed Lockhart, in August. It's not clear if the white controller and console are genuine or not, but if they do exist and belong to a Microsoft employee, then it could simply be a special edition Xbox Series X. Microsoft created a white Xbox One exclusively for employees who worked on the console when it shipped in 2013. Microsoft has refused to comment on the mysterious white Xbox controller. We have nothing to share at this time, says a Microsoft spokesperson in a statement to The Verge.
You know, here's the thing about leaks. I'm wondering if this is a deliberate leak by Microsoft.
Yeah, I've been wondering about the nature of leaks lately when we, like, Nintendo has these leaks, and then suddenly they'll release an update related to that leak. So it makes you wonder if they're, like, teasing it ahead of time, and this could definitely be one of those things where they show you a little bit of what's to come before they actually release it.
I remember the white Xbox ones. I was really jealous about it. I liked the look of it. And what I'm hoping is that if this is the Xbox Lockhart, it makes sense that it would be squatter and smaller. But also, you know, I hope they make all the Xbox Series S's white. So the Xbox Series X is black, the Xbox Series S is white. I don't know.
Like, I mean, that would be cool if there was white Xbox, but like, what? I guess the interesting part is if this actually really, if this is supposed to be announced in August.
No, releasing in August.
Releasing in August.
Here's the thing about that. Remember, the Microsoft did discontinue the Xbox One X.
Yes.
But I wonder if it would be mixed messaging. Although, we're all assuming that they're going to call it the Xbox Series X. We're all assuming that. What if they call it the Xbox One Z or something like that, you know, or the Xbox Series Premiere Preview or something like that? I will say, I don't like the D-pad. I know a lot of people like that style D-pad. I prefer the cross D-pad. For those of you who don't know what it looks like, it's like one of those – it's not a disc D-pad. It's like a disc with bevels in it. It sort of hint at it, cross in it. I mean, it's something that's been done a lot before. It's not like the Steam controller. It's more like you know what I'm talking about, TJ.
Yes. I don't know. I like – it would be cool if this was releasing in August, but I highly doubt it. I don't see anything like that happening.
I mean, it does look like the controller we've seen for the Xbox Series X. That middle button that allows you to share immediately.
I guess that's the exciting part, because then that's what I know Sony PlayStation has, a share button.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice to see Xbox do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm all for anything that helps, streamlines the process of sharing screenshots and videos.
Mm-hmm.
I will be buying a launch Xbox Series X, because I'm a tool. And here's the other thing, is that, we've mentioned before, I'll have the entire library available. I just plug in the Xbox Series X and say, okay, download these games, please. Thank you. I already own them. They're already on the system. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And, oh, by the way, did you see the new stuff about the Xbox console? I mean, the Atari console?
Yes.
Who's paying $400 for that thing? I mean, you can upload an OS on it, like Linux, or...
It is absolutely almost predatorily cashing in on the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
I mean, the launch game that's going to come with it is the Missile Command game that I showed. And it's like, it's a fun game, but it's a $3 friggin' game. It's a $3 game. Who is this for? I don't know anybody who's going to spend money on this thing.
I'm certainly not. And I
pre-orders are open.
$400 is really steep for something where you can just get that. There's an Atari collection on Steam, so you, most likely anybody that likes Atari games already has them. It's just, I don't know.
And I already have a PC. Who is this for? Who is the system for? It has less reason to exist than the Ouya.
Yeah. Like, and also they're launching it around the same time as the Xbox Series X and PS5.
That's no idea. This is making Stadia look like a wise investment.
Yeah, at least Stadia is trying to do this digital only thing, whereas this Atari is just I don't know. It is like trying to cash in on nostalgia without bringing something new to compete against these other consoles.
If they sell that Xbox style, they sell that Atari 2600 style controller separately, I will wolf it up, because those controllers were the best at playing arcade type games like Pac-Man and stuff. If this has the same stickiness, and you know what I'm talking about, if you move up, it'll go back nicely, so that, you know, you don't overdo it. You know, the old controllers had that stickiness for arcade games. And it has the extra buttons on it, for those who don't know, the Atari 2600 controller just had that one button. it also has an Xbox-style gamepad. It's like, who cares? I don't know who it's for. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item. TJ, I know less about this game. I'm pretty sure you know more about this game. Fall Guys was the top game on Twitch during its beta weekend. This comes from PC Gamer. Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout is a 60-player battle royale where everybody is wobbling gang beasts. Jelly Bean Person is a wobbling gang beast Jelly Bean Person, and every map is an obstacle course of pure chaos. Over the weekend, it enjoyed a 48-hour-long beta during which it raced to the top of the Twitch charts and Steam, where it's currently available for pre-order. Briefly sitting above every other game on Twitch in terms of viewers, beaten only by the non-game just chatting category, Fall Guys has now dropped down to 25, which is still pretty healthy for a game that isn't even out yet. It leapt up the Steam charts as well, hitting number 6 on Global Top Sellers list. So, TJ, tell us about Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout.
Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout is a battle royale game that is like if American Gladiators or Ninja Warrior was a bubblegum-themed Jelly Bean world.
Coming out on Switch, from what I understand.
Yes, it's coming out on Switch. It's coming out on Xbox. It's on PC. It's gonna launch as a free game on PS Plus if you have the PS Plus subscription. Which somebody pointed out to me, the last time that happened was Rocket League. This game is fun. It's fun in a way that other battle royales aren't, because there's a lot of time investment in those. This plays out like a little game show.
There was another game that came out like a year ago, which was a parody of PlayerUnknown's Battleground. What was it called again? It was a parody game, and everybody. It was like playing Quap. It was Quap meets PUBG. Mm. And I'm willing to bet you that this game is inspired by that, where a lot of the game is physics, and part of it, you just can't snipe somebody, you know. You just bounce at people and try, you know, you try and get the weapon first, and, you know, everything is so loose-limbed that it's almost impossible to... I mean, I can see where it's a fun game. It's sort of like Mario Party meets PUBG.
One of the funner parts of it is that, like, it's a series. It plays out like a game show, and that there's a. It's a series of challenges.
Yeah.
And you start with 60 players, but only like a certain amount can qualify per round. So, like, on the round one, 45 people can qualify to move on to the next round, which qualifying means crossing the finish line. And then, like, on the next round, you might have, like, a team-based game where it's, like, Hungry Hungry Hippos, and everybody has to get a whole bunch of balls into their colored zone. And whoever is the least has the least amount of score by the end of that, that entire team gets dropped off the board. And so, like, it's so interesting the way they went about creating these weird little party game mechanics and making this competitive mess of who will survive to the finish line.
Right. The game was totally accurate Battlegrounds. I think it's still on Game Pass.
And,
Here's the thing. I can see why it's popular on Twitch, because even if you're not playing, it's a blast to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's got a great spectator mode, too.
I mean, it's like... It's very cartoony. It's very funny. And even if you're just watching it, it's hilarious.
There's a part of it like where it demands that you cooperate with other people to get to the end of the obstacle course, even while you're competing with them. There's like a seesaw, and the seesaw is affected by physics. So if you have a whole bunch of players on one side of the seesaw will basically flip upright. And so you have to have players like jumping, distributing weight to be able to use the seesaw properly and jump across to the next platform. Meanwhile, it's got so many little things about it. Like, there's a grab button, and we actually saw, like, when I was playing with my friends, we actually saw people, like, you can party up with some other players. And so we saw people that were like, grabbing people at the finish line to try to keep them from crossing the finish line. But, like, I don't know. Dastardly Tactics aside, it is a very interesting and emergent gameplay type game.
Yeah. Here's the thing. The developer of it is Mediatonic. And right now, the best thing they're known for is Fable Fortune and Gears Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't hired by Sony, so it's kind of odd that the Xbox version has not been announced yet. So it just screams to me this is going to be a limit. This is going to be a timed exclusive.
Yeah, possibly.
But people are absolutely convinced it's coming out on Switch, and why not? Because it looks like a Switch game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very deceptively gorgeous, though.
Yeah, I mean, and I bet you Dollars to Donuts it'll be a Game Pass game too.
And also, like. It handles 60 players packed into an extremely tight space flawlessly.
You know what it actually reminds me of? It actually reminds me of Minions, the game.
Yeah. But, like, I don't think I noticed even a little bit of lag when I was playing that game, which is impressive for having that many players, like, packed into a small space.
Oh, damn. What is the name of that production company? The animation studio. It's Illumination. I can just see Illumination throwing them a ton of cash to say, make a version of this, but with Minions. And Minions, you know, they're not all the same looking. You can dress them up if you want. The only thing they have to be is bean shaped and yellow.
Yeah.
Even number of eyes is optional.
The only thing I feel like is missing from this game so far for what I would like, I mean, and this is just personal taste. Right now, you can only party up with up to three other players for a four-party team. And it's not like a team. Everybody is out for themselves. But, like, I would like to see them increase party size. I would also like them to add custom games where you can create custom rooms and do...
You should have teams like you do in bicycling. You know, you have a team of four, and they're all working together, even though they're in the same race.
And I think that's kind of what they're trying to avoid, is people teaming and griefing other players. But at the same time...
But that's the entire point. The entire game is griefing.
Yes. The entire game is absolute, like, small area chaos. And so, like, I would like... I think they should go ahead and increase the party size. I also hope that they add custom games and custom servers to this, because I would love to, like, get large groups of people together for, like, a party in this game.
Have you seen it, Scott?
No, I haven't.
Just look it up. Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout. Although, if you put in Fall Guys, the browser will immediately say Ultimate Knockout.
Yep, it's there.
Yeah, so you just have a bunch of minions playing.
Oh, okay. I did see the trailer for this at one of the game reviews. It was before the Microsoft showcase. I think it was been last year.
Yeah. The thing about it is that you know how it's going to make its money, right? It's going to make its money on cosmetics.
It has a battle yeah. pass.
It's going to make its money on cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the characters look different. They have their own hats. They have their own clothes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's delightful. Yeah, you can
buy a hat or buy a whatever cosmetic thing to make your character look different.
And it's a wonderful power play to be able to put this on PS Plus like right at launch, because like there are plenty of people I know that would enjoy this game, and it's going to be an easy sell to them if it's free.
Yeah. Well, not free, but you know, available for free for being part of the subscription service.
Mm-hmm.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Al Pichard.
And we will see you next week, and it won't be another two-hour show because just a lot of stuff going on this past week.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a very action-packed week. Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.